Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up over the next half hour, Pope Benedict greets Italy's new ambassador to the Holy See. Rumors and a drawing appear to have triggered a rampage on a Christian village in Nigeria, part of a disturbing trend of interfaith violence in that African nation. And a different kind of garden than what you might expect. U.S. bishops give tips on how to cultivate a blooming relationship. Pope Benedict greeted Italy's new ambassador to the Holy See as he presented his credentials to the Holy Father in the Vatican this week. Charles Collins has the story.
The Catholic Church and the Italian state are each sovereign in their own sphere, but can collaborate for the promotion of man and the benefit of mankind. Reiterating the message of the various agreements between the Holy See and Italy, Pope Benedict greeted the new ambassador from Italy to the Holy See, Antonio Zanardi Landi. The Holy Father told the ambassador the Church is not looking for power and does not claim privileges or seek social or economic advantages. However, the Catholic Church does ask to be recognized for her specific nature and to be able to develop freely her particular mission for the well-being of not only the members of the Church in the country, but of all Italians. Pope Benedict specifically mentioned areas of interest for the Church as protection of human life in all its stages, the protection of the family, the building up of a better world, respect for creation, and intercultural interfaith dialogue. The Holy Father concluded his address by urging Italy to make use of its recent election to the United Nations Human Rights Council and work for the defense of the dignity of the human person and its inalienable rights, including that of religious freedom. I'm Charles Collins.
Quello che mi ha colpito del discorso del Santo Padre è stato il tono positivo ed incoraggiante del discorso.
Ambassador Zanardi Landi told Vatican Radio he appreciated the positive and encouraging tone the Pope used in his discourse. The Pope, he observed, urged Italy to make its contribution to the international community by promoting those human and Christian values which make up what the Holy Father called the ideal patrimony that gave birth to Italy's culture and civil and religious history.
Molto legati a una concezione dell'uomo che caratterizza il nostro paese.
At least 9 people are dead and more are feared killed in a recent attack on Christians in northern Nigeria. While kidnappings of foreign nationals keep the world's attention focused on the oil-rich but desperately poor Niger Delta region, human rights organizations are concerned, too, about the continued Muslim-Christian violence in other parts of Nigeria. I spoke to Christian Solidarity Worldwide's officer for Sub-Saharan Africa, Dr. Kataza Gondwe, about the latest interfaith violence in Nigeria.
In the Tudunwada area of Kano, there's been an attack on Christians, and an unknown number have died. The official number is 9, but from what we are hearing, the level might be much higher than that. When the area was finally, visited by people who were allowed to go in, they overheard a local policeman, saying that he was tired of packing up bodies and describing some terribly mutilated corpse that he had to deal with. So the situation is pretty dire. It seems that the violence broke out because there had been tensions previously throughout the northern and central Nigerian region concerning the publication of unspecified cartoons internationally that were deemed to be offensive to the Islamic religion and depicting the Prophet Muhammad. I hear there's one cartoon in Bangladesh that was publicized, and also another in Sweden. But as usual in these circumstances, when something happens internationally, Christians in Nigeria tend to bear the brunt of the reaction to it through acts of violence such as this.
So what you're saying then, that this is by no means an isolated incident. However, am I wrong in saying that incidents such as these seem to have gone down?
Well, in one way you are wrong, and another way you aren't. The incidents were pretty intense during the earlier 1990s. From 1999 onwards, several states had been campaigning for full Sharia law. And during that time, and during the institution of full Sharia by 12 states now so far, there were frequent outbreaks of violence against Christians. And frequently you heard of people being killed and villages being attacked and all sorts of terrible atrocities taking place. Since 2004, I would say they may have diminished a little. This followed the outbreak of violence in Kano, where, according to the Christian Association of Nigeria, at least 2,000 Christians were murdered in retaliation for an event in Christian Plateau State. After that, the Nigerian federal government took some decisive action against Plateau States, funnily enough, and incidences seemed to die down at that time. However, there are still periodic outbreaks of violence against Christians, but usually events abroad are used as a pretext. As you're aware, there's an outbreak when the Danish cartoons were published in 2006. And more recently, what you're hearing are terrible attacks against individual Christians or small groups of Christians, such as the murder, very brutal murder earlier this year, of a Christian school teacher on a false pretense of having damaged the Quran or disrespected the Quran, who was effectively lynched by her students. So that kind of thing keeps happening. And in the run-up to the publication of the cartoons, we were hearing of problems in Plateau State, where a certain region in the capital city, Jos, was being controlled by Muslim gangs who would stop people and ask them whether they were Christian or Muslim. And if they replied with the wrong answer, they would actually mutilate them quite badly. So that was an ongoing thing. And then the cartoons came up, and we were hearing rumors that people had threatened to actually take action once Ramadan was over. But it seems that with this incident, a false allegation was set up that students at a school had drawn a picture of Muhammad on the mosque, and that proves the basis to just start off violence even before the end of Ramadan.
Twelve out of Nigeria's 36 states apply Sharia law, which is based on teachings of the Quran and the Sunnah, the practice of the Prophet Muhammad. Many Islamic countries implement Sharia in varying degrees, some more strictly than others. Punishments can include beheadings, public hangings, stoning, and whippings.
What we're talking about is the full Sharia, the Sharia penal code, because Sharia was already at work in Nigeria, but really to do with cultural and social and family law issues. That was already, the whole system already instituted throughout the nation. However, what these states did was actually bring in the Sharia penal code, so you had Sharia punishments for offenses such as the stoning for adultery and, cutting off of hands for theft. And by bringing in the Sharia penal code, you have a penal code that is actually contrary to the federal civil one. And what they did was effectively institute a de facto state religion in the areas where this is being practiced. And this in itself is a violation of the Nigerian constitution that says that no religion should be given preeminence over another because Nigeria is a multi-religious state. So 12 states have either introduced it fully or are still in the process of introducing the Sharia Penal Code, which will make Islamic law the primary law in these states.
You're saying that the Sharia goes against the federal law. What is the government doing to bring these states in line with the federal government?
Well, they've done very, very little. Under President Obasanjo, what you had was a president who stated, oh, this is just a political ploy that will fizzle out. When it failed to fizzle out, he still didn't take much action. And as the violence, religious violence, continued, there was still no real action until the issue that happened in Plateau State that triggered off events in Kano. And Kano doesn't take, it doesn't take much to trigger off killings in Kano because there have been periodic pogroms, is the only word you can use, against Christians in that state throughout the years. So when that happened, he actually penalized Plateau State, which is a majority Christian state, but did nothing to penalize Kano, which has a Muslim majority. But that is the most that the government has done. Another thing that they did as well, much more recently, and towards the end of the Obasanjo regime, was that they issued a federal challenge to the establishment of Hizba, which are Sharia enforcement squads, like, you know, little almost militia groups that enforce the Sharia, making sure women wear the right headdress, etc., etc. And they said that these things are unconstitutional and should not be funded by the state because the money comes from the federal government, and they, you know, haven't given the money for that. So Kano, again, challenged this statement in the Supreme Court and lost. So recently there's been a ruling that the Hizba, whichever state has created a Hizba, should disband the Hizba. But we would just wait to see whether the new government will actually enforce that.
As Gondwe explains, then, some Sharia practices in Nigeria are applied in stark contrast with the country's federal law. Striking the right balance between the Islamic law and Nigeria's federal law will represent a challenge to the country's new president, Umaru Yar Adua, sworn in last May.
We just wait to see how he will react. He himself is a very devout Muslim, but he's also seen as somebody who is less corrupt than most, or corruptible than many people in leadership in Nigeria in recent years. So we just pray that he will be also a man who will bring about reconciliation.
What is being done at a local level to overcome these religious barriers, to encourage reconciliation among the different faith groups? And I also wonder, is it just the Christians who are, let's say, targeted, or is it also traditional Africans?
Yes, traditional Africans are targeted as well and have been targeted throughout all of this violence, as well as the Christians. But because Christian churches, etc., are much more visible, I think you'll hear about more about their religious structures being destroyed. But in terms of the killings, they will kill the followers of traditional beliefs. And also, they kill people who look as if they're not from the northern region. So you might have somebody who is an Igbo, for example, from the south, and he may or may not be a Christian, but because he or she is visibly not from the north, they are killed as well. In terms of reconciliation works, there are a few organizations that are trying to undertake reconciliation work and have done some important work. In the area of Kaduna, there is a pastor and an imam who have worked together to bring about peace. They're called Interfaith. And they have tried to spread their message of peace and reconciliation, working with the two different communities and then bringing the two communities together. There are other organizations at a local level that are trying to bring about reconciliation. But in terms of the higher level negotiations, there is a bit of anxiety that whenever, I think the CAN secretary, general secretary, actually expressed this after the recent killings, that although they are meeting with Muslim leaders at national reconciliation talks, every time there are meetings, there's another attack on Christians. So he expressed his wonder about whether or not these people can actually control their people, and of whether or not it's worth continuing with these meetings if every time it happens, it just leads to another attack. So there are efforts, but there are also great frustration about people who may not be going to these reconciliation talks with true motives, if you see what I mean.
Dr. Kitaza Gandwe of Christian Solidarity Worldwide. Wedding dresses and bridal bouquets, are they a thing of the past? Well, to judge from recent statistics in the United States, they may well be on their way out, as more and more people are opting for living together instead of tying the knot. Marriages have dropped by half over the last 50 years, and about half of those end up in divorce. U.S. church leaders are concerned. Successful marriages, they say, don't work on automatic pilot, at least not for long. Rather, they're like a garden, which requires constant attention like watering and weeding. Healthy marriages, like gardens, don't tend to die suddenly, U.S. bishops say, but they can slowly shrivel up and die when couples fail to tend to their relationship by letting things slide and taking each other for granted. U.S. bishops have come up with a new campaign to help couples discover new ways to nurture their marriage. Some ideas are so surprisingly obvious, they sometimes get forgotten in the hustle and bustle of everyday life. Something as simple as an act of kindness, even just one a day, can be just what the gardener ordered to keep a marriage blooming. Susie Hodges takes a look.
I flirted with my husband like when we first got married. That's what I did for him this morning, and it made him happy.
I've actually spent some time cleaning the house because my wife is working, and I thought it would be a good idea when she comes home from work to come home to a clean house.
I had to leave before my husband got up this morning, and so I stopped by his office and told him I loved him on my way back home.
Today, I sent an email to my husband expressing to him how much he means to me and how much his dedication and love means to me every day. And he sent one back, sort of the same way, and I said, you rock. You got a big, big,
big, bad love. What have you done for your marriage today? That was the question those married people in the street and park were being asked as part of a new campaign by the Catholic Church to provide practical help to couples. Their answers are meant to show that no matter how small, these gestures of kindness can help to nurture a marriage. The Bishop's Committee on Marriage and the Family has launched these public service announcements, or PSAs, and a web campaign to highlight the value of marriage and provide support for engaged and married couples. Sheila Garcia is Associate Director of the committee. She says couples seem to be looking for a few tools to help their marriage, especially very practical assistance and tips. She told me more about their campaign and how it got off the ground.
The firm that actually developed our public service announcements, or PSAs, did some focus groups with married couples just to see what messages might be important to them about marriage. And the one message that really came across is the whole idea of participation, and that is that it takes work. You have to be involved in your marriage to make it succeed. You really have to be committed to it. That's the language we would use. So we decided to carry out that theme when we did the PSAs, and we found that people gave answers that were very charming and sweet and sometimes thought-provoking. But the theme of it was, it's the little things that count. It's the little acts of kindness that you can do for your spouse each day. And that, again, is picking up this whole idea of participation in the marriage, really getting involved, not just letting your marriage slide, but doing something to strengthen it every day.
Now, what kind of feedback have you got so far from the faithful to this campaign, this publicity campaign on marriage?
The feedback has been wonderful. We launched this in Denver, and we're thrilled that people who were at the launch responded so positively to the PSAs. Those were people who, by and large, are family ministers in parishes and dioceses. So they're the people who are directly delivering the services. And they really felt that the PSAs and the website are a real shot in the arm to their ministry, that it's really going to do a lot to boost the profile of marriage in this country. And also, what we want to do is associate the Catholic Church with positive messages about marriage, and these people really felt that that would be the case. We've gotten a lot of positive feedback about the website, so we're pleased that we've gotten a great reception so far.
And any particular comments from married couples themselves who've seen your video clips?
Well, I think the people who are looking at it are seeing a lot of really practical information that they can use. Also, very interestingly, a lot of them have young adult children who may be thinking about marriage or are just married, and they're asking their kids to get on the website and look at it. And again, we're getting some positive feedback from those folks. I showed it to my 28-year-old son's girlfriend. I showed her the PSAs, and she was just thrilled. She thought this was absolutely the right way to communicate with younger people.
In addition to the radio and television clips, Garcia says the church's program is helping couples look more closely at specific issues like conflict resolution.
One of the main pieces of advice is not to ignore conflict or potentially conflictual situations. A lot of people hesitate to deal with conflict. They're afraid of what might happen. But we say that if you don't deal with conflict, it just won't go away. It'll get worse. So you really have to take it on. It's important to understand that, you know, conflict is inherent in any marriage. That's why skills to deal with it are so necessary. But it's important to make the distinction between normal everyday conflict and when situations have gotten to a point where some kind of professional intervention is called for. So we try to talk a little bit about when professional counseling might be appropriate. But basically everyone, you know, every marriage is dealing with some kind of conflict. So the more you're able to anticipate this and deal with it constructively, the healthier the marriage will be.
And what were typically some of these most common everyday conflicts that you encountered?
A lot of them, as you might expect, come around financial issues. You know, we have people making a lot of money in some cases, but just unable to handle their finances, really being stretched. Balancing home and work responsibilities, that's a big one. Our couples are really pressed for time. Over and over again, couples tell us we just don't have time for ourselves, for our relationship, for our families, for community activities. So that's a real balancing act that couples have to contend with.
And presumably also communication skills. This must be an issue where many couples do come unstuck.
Absolutely. Communication is just key to all of those issues that I just mentioned. This is the work of a lifetime. We really try to emphasize that although communication is usually dealt with in pre-marriage programs, you know, when you get married, you just don't have it all together. You're constantly working to improve how you communicate with your spouse. So that's one reason we encourage couples to consider marriage education, kind of booster shots for their marriage. And a lot of marriage education really deals with how to improve communication skills, because all of us can do better at that.
As I found out, the U.S. Church also has a number of other initiatives in the pipeline to help couples living out the sacrament of marriage.
Your committee is also doing research on Catholic couples at the moment.
What we did was to sample Catholic adults about their beliefs about marriage and how they conform to church teaching about marriage and a whole series of other questions. What we found, interestingly, probably one of the major findings, is that the vast majority of respondents say that they are somewhat or very familiar with Catholic Church teaching about marriage. So they really feel that they know what the Church teaches about commitment, about permanence, about openness to life. And we think that's a good thing. We are going to compare Catholic attitudes about marriage to attitudes in the general population, and we think that will be interesting to see if there is indeed a Catholic effect on marriage. We think it's important to speak directly to married couples. We will certainly talk about Catholic teaching on marriage in a positive way. We want to talk about a vision for marriage. What does it mean that marriage is sacramental? What about commitment? That's certainly a major theme. We'll probably talk about the skills needed, skills like communication, again, participation in one's marriage, all these themes that we'll try to draw together and present in a very accessible way. People have said, don't speak in theological language. Talk to us in a way that we can understand. So that's what we're going to try to do.
A look at the marriage and divorce statistics in the US is an indication of how many daunting challenges are faced by married couples in today's secularized society. But despite the high number of marital breakdowns in the US, Garcia says when couples tie the knot, they are very sincere in their desire to make it work.
People in the US really value marriage. We know that from polls that have been done. Secular polls confirm that people place a high priority on getting married, and indeed the vast majority of people will be married at some point in their life. But we know that there's a lot of difficulty surrounding marriage. For example, the whole idea of commitment is problematic for a lot of people. There's hesitancy to make the commitment to marry, and therefore the age of marriage at first marriage is getting older, around 26 and 27 now. And once people do make the commitment to get married, it's hard to keep it together. There's a mentality that people look at marriage to say, well, what's in it for me? I want to find my soulmate. And if they get into marriage and find out it's not working out, that maybe this person is not their soulmate, then they're pretty quick to get out of it. So that's a real problem that we face, is really strengthening the commitment in marriage.
How many marriages nowadays do tend to end in divorce? And how many people are also simply not getting married at all, but just choosing to live together?
The divorce statistics are hard to calculate. You can look at this any number of ways. Perhaps around 40% of marriages will end in divorce, but we know that in recent years the divorce rate has actually stabilized and may even be declining slightly. That's the good news. The reason for that, we think, or one reason, there's a number of them, but one reason is that people are getting married later in life and those people tend to stay together. So the situation is maybe improving a little bit, but we do have tremendous numbers of people who are still living together without marriage. We certainly know that when couples come to the Catholic Church for marriage preparation, that priests and pastoral staff tell us that well over half, maybe as many as 60 or 70% of those couples are already living together. So that's a real challenge.
Sheila Garcia is Associate Director of the U.S. Bishops Committee on Marriage and the Family. She was speaking there to my colleague, Susie Hodges. And that concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.